This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. May 2023, the election in Turkey, called by the very strong-minded President Erdogan as the most important election this year, perhaps for the decade. Why? Turkey's in the midst of everything. It is Asia Minor. It is the remnant of an empire that still very much informs the people of the whole of the Middle East. And also, there is the Ukraine conflict, and this is the Black Sea Basin. So I welcome Sinan Chitty of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. The professor's here to help me first on the election. What are the issues? Who are the candidates, given the success of Mr. Erdogan's presidency to hold on to power these many years? What are the prospects of him being unseated? And then we'll turn to Turkish foreign policy, always in the news because it's a member of NATO. Professor, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. Erdogan, President Erdogan, means to be reelected. Good for him. He heads the AKP, his Justice Party. However, the opposition this time looks like a coalition, an alliance. It calls itself the Nation Alliance. Is this unprecedented for six parties to come together? Good evening to you.
Good evening, and thank you for having me back. Yes, I think it's a little unprecedented to see a coalition of parties to come together just to challenge one sitting president, right? Essentially, in what we estimate to be is going to be the election day of May 14. And that should be an indicator of why it's interesting, simply because it's one man faced off by a party of six other parties. Gives you an indication of how essentially strong he is in office and possibly regarded by the electorate, that the opposition has decided that rather than try and field their individual candidates, they're going to try and take him on by becoming unified and fielding, hopefully, a single candidate to defeat him at the polls.
Justice and Development Party, the AKP. Before we examine the candidates, the possible candidates to oppose the president, and remember, it's a 50% barrier you have to get over to capture in the first round. So there's a lot of play here. But the issues, you know, Professor, that in the United States, we talk foreign policy, but we vote domestic policy. What is the domestic policy that drives this election? What is Erdogan's position towards that policy?
Yes, that's a good question. So at the domestic side, I think if you look at it from the perspective of voters, the number one thing on their mind right now is the state of the economy, because it really is in dark times. It's very fragile. It has an extremely high level of inflation, officially running at about 65%, unofficially, but more accurate, probably running close to 150% a year. So consumer prices, rents, you know, just the ability to fill up your car, is extremely debilitating in Turkey, and salaries have not, you know, risen to meet this sort of inflationary pressures that's put upon them. So voters are really looking for a lot of relief. The question is whether Mr. Erdogan, who has been in power as president since 2014, but also just in power as prime minister also since 2003, right, can deliver on voters, you know, economic concerns. So those are the big issues. That's the biggest issue at play domestically. And that's what essentially I think will help determine voters one way or the other.
My memory is that Mr. Erdogan has unusual and creative opinions of monetary policy. I remember him raising or lowering interest rates quite contrary to the rest of the central bankers. Do I remember correctly? And is he associated with the inflation because of that bouncing policy of his?
Absolutely, he is, yes. And Turkey has continued to reduce interest rates. And right now, my last look at the official rates, the policy rate, Turkey's again at 9%, down from a high of 16% last year. And that's out of Mr. Erdogan's way, basically, because he thinks that if he continues to lower interest rates in the short term, or, you know, for the last medium term, for the last year or so, right, that's going to keep the economy afloat. Just, you know, production and consumer spending is going to continue to tick up. And that's what he would like to achieve ahead of the election. He does not want to sort of raise the rates and grind the levers of sort of economic growth and to depress the economy to try and rein in inflation. So bottom line, he'd rather have a high inflation that basically enables continuous spending.
You report in your essay that Mr. Erdogan has skills called spoils. What spoils, and how does he mean to offset the inflation? What's he giving away?
So what he's doing, what the government is doing ahead of what is on May 14, which is when we think the election is going to be held right now, based on his own statements, is they are pumping the economy full of money. So in essentially providing a sugar high to voters, but also businesses and whatnot. So what we've seen is, you know, increases in public salaries, public appointments to the bureaucracy, but also an increase in state pensions, of, you know, a significant increase in the minimum wage in real Turkish lira. Although all these increases are still vastly below the level of inflation, but it's all intended essentially to say to voters, look, the opposition essentially has no other game. They don't necessarily have anything to say or convince you. In the meantime, I'm still spending, right? And you at least, you know, I've increased, you know, to the extent that we can, salaries and pensions and whatnot. So it's intended to make the voter think, well, I don't know what the other guy is going to promise or deliver on, but right now, President Erdogan and the government is still delivering, so I may just stick with the devil I know.
We come to the opposition challenging President Erdogan, who's a very strong leader, always in the news. The important person that whom I know of because of the contested election of Istanbul several years ago is İmamoğlu, representing one of the six parties and a major choice. Now, the puzzle here is, if he does win the office, I understand he can't sit in the office. He would be discounted immediately. I'm not quite sure what Mr. Erdogan has planned for his opponent, if his opponent is successful.
So you're right. I mean, Mr. İmamoğlu, who is the current mayor of Istanbul since 2019, if he was nominated to be the presidential candidate of the opposition alliance, we think that he stands the highest chance of being elected, possibly even in the first round of voting, to push him over the 50% barrier and defeat Erdogan. And you know, a lot of people like myself basically come to that conclusion based on polling data and opinion and various other analyses that we're keeping in touch with. But if he does win, you are absolutely right. He has a political ban slapped down on him from the courts, right? On what I would consider to be, or not just me, but just most sort of serious scholars of Turkey would consider to be, you know, fake charges. You know, he was accused of essentially insulting public bureaucrats. He called a bunch of people in the High Election Council, quote, fools, which then slapped, you know, which is, you know, it can land a monetary fine in Turkey if you insult a public official. But this, they went the full throttle and essentially issued a ban against them. And many people associate that to be sort of motivated by President Erdogan's wishes, although we can't be sure. But that also is an indication of Mr. Erdogan's fear of Mr. İmamoğlu, right? Because Mr. İmamoğlu defeated the AKP candidates for the first time in the AKP's history in 20 years or plus of governing Istanbul, and successfully won the mayoralty of Istanbul in 2019. Mr. Erdogan was so angry that he nullified the election and ran it again. And Mr. İmamoğlu won the second time, even with a greater margin. So İmamoğlu would be the nightmare sort of candidate. But all signs are pointing right now that the opposition alliance is not going to nominate him. And I think that's a mistake.
Now we come to the other candidate whom you report is possible, the nominee, Kılıçdaroğlu, who is the what represents the Kurdish people, generally speaking, but also as a man who believes the nomination is his for the taking. Is that correct?
So Mr. Kılıçdaroğlu is actually the chairman of the main opposition party, the party of Atatürk, Republican People's Party. He's the chairman of that. And Mr. İmamoğlu is essentially the mayor of Istanbul, but affiliated with the same party. So you're looking at a possible competition between the chairman of the party and a mayor of a major city in Turkey, which they happen to be members of the same party. You're right, though. Mr. Kılıçdaroğlu does think that, you know, and he's been advised, we think, that he is the best candidate to face off against Erdogan. He's over 70 years old. He has not scored one electoral victory against Mr. Erdogan since being in leadership position since 2010. I think he's made a lot of election sort of campaigning mistakes in the last 12 months. And many believe him to be off message and does not have the chops to essentially face off against Erdogan to successfully defeat him at the polls. But you're right. He does think it's for his taking. But this is also worrying and causing contention amongst other members of the opposition alliance, who would like to possibly see Mr. İmamoğlu as the candidate. So we still, that's why a candidate has still not been declared ahead of the May 14 election, because the alliance is sort of trying to hammer out how to come to a consensus in terms of who is going to be essentially nominated. Right now, it appears to be, you know, the way, you know, the center of gravity seems to suggest that Mr. Kılıçdaroğlu will be the nomination, which is not the best foot forward that the alliance can put forward, and also the candidate that Mr. Erdogan would like to face off against.
There is a compromise from the point of view of a reader who's just coming to this, which is the mayor of Ankara, Mansur Yavaş. However, I also understand it's necessary to have the support of the Kurdish factions in order to win 50%, and Mr. Yavaş is not. So what I'm reading from your reporting is that there's a quandary here. If this was settable, they would have already decided. It's very contradictory.
Right. So, you know, the Kurds in Turkey account for a huge portion of the national votes. I mean, you know, you're looking at somewhere between 20 to 25% of Turkey's population are of Kurdish origin. Their main political party in parliament, which is the People's Democracy Party, like I said, polls at anywhere between 12 to 15%. So you're looking at 6 to 7 million votes, right? Whoever is going to be president, you know, especially on the opposition side, needs their vote. I mean, it's just plain and simple, right? So they do favor, I don't think they would have an opposition, any sort of, you know, bad thing to say if Mr. İmamoğlu became the actual consensus candidate. I think they would support that. It's simply because Mr. İmamoğlu seems to be broadly a liberal individual who is essentially, you know, would work towards granting them more sort of constitutional guarantees and cultural protections under a new government. Whereas Mr. Yavaş, as you alluded to, is another potential candidate. He is the mayor of Ankara right now. The problem with him is, electorally speaking, is he does not essentially have the favor of the Kurds. He has deep background in Turkey's Turkish nationalist movement, which is an anathema to Kurdish voters, broadly speaking. So the problem with Yavaş is he cannot deliver the Kurdish vote to push the push himself over the 50% electoral barrier. And that's where Mr. İmamoğlu has the advantage, but he's bedeviled as of now by a political ban. So even if he were to win and was the candidate, present law suggests that he may not be able to take on the seat of president. He'd be blocked by the country's election council. That being said, we should bear in mind that in 2002, when the Justice and Development Party won the national elections, Mr. Erdogan also had a political ban on him. He was not permitted to take the seat of prime minister, right? But owing to a huge amount of public pressure that ensued on the courts and on the election council, that political ban was revoked, right? And Mr. Erdogan, after 6 months following the election, was able to essentially take his parliamentary seat in a special by-election and then become prime minister. So my point would be, like, yes, Mr. İmamoğlu is banned. If you nominate him and he successfully defeats Erdogan, there would be enormous pressure on the institutions of the country to basically get rid of this sham or this, you know, bogus political ban that's been slapped on him to essentially prevent him from, you know, running against Erdogan.
Sinan Çiğdem of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, my guide on Turkish matters. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.